The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by Storyworth. Looking for that unique gift that will show someone special just how special they are? Come on, Christmas is coming. Go to storyworth.com/brain and get $20 off the gift of their life. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. This is your host, Paul Coliani. I am a personal empowerment coach, and I'm here to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a physician or therapist or whoever you go to before making any changes to your medical or therapeutic treatment. All right, I want to talk about something I'm very, very familiar with, something that I've experienced most of my life, and to a certain extent, even today, well, to a large extent, because it's still in me, and that is adaptability and the idea of being a chameleon in any situation. You know what chameleons do, right? They change color, or at least some of them, I think some of them change colors to like match the color of the rock they're sitting on or the plant they're on. And they adapt in the environment so they are accepted by those in that environment. It makes them less susceptible to things that eat them. They stay out of danger. And that's one of the things that I learned to do at a very early age. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment. So I'm going to read this email that came in from someone I'll call Joe. And Joe says, "Hi, Paul, I just discovered your show and I've been binge listening for the past couple of days." Well, this is a couple months old or more now, so he's probably listened to every single episode by now. Thank you, Joe. He says, "I'm currently listening to your show about a dysfunctional childhood. I heard you say that you developed a chameleon way of life or living, and I'm a notorious chameleon, and I found that it's really had its advantages over the years. I too had a dysfunctional childhood. In some future episode, would you mind talking a little bit more about developing that fit-in-anywhere personality? I'd like to know more about how I developed it and what are some of the pitfalls associated with being a chameleon." All right, thanks, Joe. And absolutely, like I said, I know a lot about this. And in fact, before recording this, after reading your message off the air, I was thinking, when did that start? And I remember wanting to fit in with the adults when I was a child. I mean, I was maybe less than 10, maybe I was like 7 or 8. And I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be accepted and treated like another adult. And so I don't know necessarily where that came from, but I do know that living with an alcoholic made me a super perfectionist, super responsible. And of course, this chameleon, because you adapt so that the person that might be traumatic in your life or abusive in your life isn't abusive towards you, or at least that's the goal. So children often develop these survival or coping mechanisms so that they don't get picked on or incite the behavior of someone that could do some damage in some way. So that's how I believe my chameleon adaptability behavior started, and how it often starts in many people who become people pleasers and rescuers and always trying to make sure that the situation is neutralized. They don't want to, you know, conflict avoidance kind of stuff. And so that's who I was, and that's who I had been and have been for many, many years. I was always the neutralizer. I was always the one to balance the equation. If someone was getting a little angry, I could neutralize that anger. I could help them calm down. And that was my role also, from what I'm told, as a middle child. So being the middle child, from the theories out there, from probably studies that I haven't even looked at yet, has to do with being mediator, neutralizer, balancer, negotiator type of person that can handle most situations. So that doesn't mean that none of the other children in a relationship or a family can or can't do that. It's just, I guess, more common in the middle child. Like I said, I haven't studied the middle child thing yet. But certainly, with the dysfunctional home, there is that ability that children can develop to become very adaptable to their surroundings, to the people around them, so to make themselves less noticeable. And if you're less noticeable, you're less likely to get picked on or hurt or whatever the situation is. At least that's the hope of the child that does it. And what they do is they try it. They become the chameleon, meaning they know that when they cry, they get smacked, so they learn not to cry, which may cut off their connection to their emotions. So when they grow up, they may have trouble accessing those emotions. That's just one example. It doesn't mean it's absolutely true with everyone, but that's what can happen. So let me go back to when I actually remember trying to fit in with the adults. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be trusted as someone who was, I don't know, a member of the gang, you know, a part of the bigger picture of all the people there, because they would all get along. I remember seeing them, you know, talking to each other and laughing with each other. And I thought, I want to be a part of that. I want to fit in. And so I would try to fit in. And I think I remember going to my stepfather and asking, you know, why aren't adults talking to me? Why don't they like me? Why can't I fit in? I don't know what the question I asked when I was a kid, but I remember this is how I felt, and I'm sure I worded it in a way that made sense to him, because he gave me a reply that lasted with me up until this day, which is very interesting. And I don't know if this is necessarily a dysfunction that I developed because of his reply, or if it actually helped me become, you know, more mature faster, probably both. But he said, if you want to be treated like a man, you have to act like a man. And I think about those words nowadays, and I'm wondering how would that be beneficial or hurtful to the child who still has his childhood. And I don't think it was like intentionally hurtful from him. I'm just thinking, was that advice helpful to a child? Regardless, you know, I could do some introspection on that and figure that out. But when I look back, I do see that as one of the main reasons I became adaptable and a chameleon, because as soon as he said that, I went, what does that mean? How do I utilize this information? So I started observing adults. I started becoming very aware of the way they talked, their mannerisms, how they responded to me, the way I showed up and how they responded to that, what I said and what made them laugh, what made them not laugh, what made them upset, what made them not upset. I just tested things. So at a very early age, I was highly observant of communication and behavior from other people. And I believe it was a direct cause, at least one of the components of this, was a direct cause of taking that advice to heart and saying, hey, if I want to be treated like a man, I need to act like one. Which to me, I believe I interpreted as, I want to be treated like an adult, I need to act like an adult. Because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to fit in with the adults. And so that, along with being in a volatile household where I believed I needed to adapt to survive, to make it through every night, every day, so I wouldn't get hurt. Or maybe I thought I was going to get killed back then. How can I fit into the environment so I don't stick out? It's sort of like the gray rock technique in manipulative relationships. If you're trying to get away from someone who's manipulative, you go no contact and you become a gray rock, meaning you become as exciting and noticeable as a gray rock. And you can think of a gray rock on the beach with a bunch of other gray rocks. You just don't stand out. That's a great amount of adaptability there. If you can become the gray rock and dull, then you won't be noticed. Now, what Joe is saying is more along the lines of probably in the adult world when you become the chameleon. It's not necessarily to disappear, at least this is the way I'm interpreting it, Joe, but it's to fit in and be a part of something in a way where people accept you and like you. So there's the two different ways to look at this is that A, when I was a child, I fit in with the adults and it worked because the more, quote, mature I became and the more, quote, adult conversations I attempted to have, the more adults paid attention to me. So I thought that was interesting. But at the same time, I was also adaptable in my volatile environment when I didn't want to be noticed. So this adaptability goes both ways. And like Joe said, it can be very handy. It can be very useful. And I'm a full believer that every dysfunction that we have is also a function. It also has a use. It also is a tool that you can choose to use anytime you feel like you need to use it. So somebody may look at adaptability or being the chameleon as dysfunctional at first. Like, you're just not showing up as your authentic self. What's wrong with you? You know, I don't know if they say that, but, you know, what's going on? Why are you doing that? And it may be based on a survival mechanism that you developed a long time ago. But let's just say that you choose to do that. Let's just say that it's a choice. This is what I love about dysfunction. Dysfunction can be a choice. The dysfunctional behaviors that we developed can be a choice. Just like if you, for example, are the rescuer type. The rescuer type is the type of person that comes up to you and says, hey, is everything all right? And you go, yeah, everything's fine. Well, let me get those bags for you. And then you say, no, that's okay. And then they go, no, I got them. They look heavy. I'll take care of them. They're trying to rescue you from something that they perceive to be maybe a burden to you, or they're trying to make your life easier. And, that can be seen as both dysfunctional because, hey, you know what? If I needed your help, I would ask for your help. But, you know, thank you for trying to help me, but you're not also listening to me when I say no. So there's some dysfunction there because you're not honoring the boundaries of the person that you're trying to rescue. But let's just say that as the rescuer, you know that you do this, you become aware of it, and you make it more of a choice and not be so overbearing. And when you say, hey, let me get those bags for you, and the person goes, no, I got it, then you go, oh, okay. So, okay, now you're making it a choice. You can go, okay, I'll back off. And then with something else, you can say, hey, would you like me to help you with that to gain brownie points? I know it sounds a little influential, sounds a little manipulative, but the idea is, how do you use your dysfunction in a helpful, beneficial way to everyone as a win-win? Because the rescuer, and a lot of people pleasers do this too, can do their dysfunction to their own detriment, where they sap their own energy. When your happiness becomes diminished because of your dysfunction, then you are overdoing your dysfunction. I know it's just easier to say, stop doing dysfunctions or work on your dysfunctions, heal them. But I like the idea of making your dysfunction a choice. So think of it this way: when you discover something about yourself that's zapping your energy and making you feel less happy and you get tired. Like, I used to be a people pleaser. It's just like, it would always wear me out. I would get so tired pleasing others and trying to predict what they wanted. I mean, it's very similar to rescuing, but people pleasing is like, you're afraid to say no to them because they may not like you, or you're afraid to say no to your boss. It's always afraid to say no to someone, right? Or honor your boundaries or something. You have some fear that you won't be liked. So you do things that you may not want to do just to keep people liking you. That gets old. It really does. Not only for you, because you're giving more energy than you have, because it wears you out. You will get burnt out people pleasing. But people end up not experiencing the authentic you. And sometimes because of that, the authentic you starts to bleed through. They can sense that maybe you're irritated by something, but they don't know why you're irritated. Maybe you're a little passive aggressive, but they don't know why you're a little passive aggressive. And so that starts to bleed through as you give and give and give, and you're expecting the same amount in return, or you want to be liked in return and they're not reciprocating in the way you want. And on and on and on. There's episodes I've talked about where people pleasing can be very detrimental to your happiness. And that's what I mean about dysfunctions, is that any dysfunction that's detrimental to your happiness, anything that zaps your energy, that makes you feel tired afterward, is less of a choice and more of an old program. So that's just good to know, good to observe about yourself. If something is zapping your energy, something is sucking that energy out and making you feel tired, making you feel unhappy, that's probably a dysfunction that you're continuing to do that might need to be looked at. So back to Joe's question, which is, in a future episode, would you mind talking a little bit more about this fit-in personality? He would like to know how he developed it. I would definitely look in your past and ask yourself the question, when did I start doing it and why? That's a good question. When did I start doing it and why? When I think about when I started doing it and why, I remember certain aspects of my childhood, but I don't remember exactly developing it. I don't know when it started. However, this leads to the next question. When you left home, when you were out on your own, why did you do it then? And that should answer the question. Why was I a chameleon? Why did I become so adaptable in situations? And your answers might revolve around, I wanted to be liked. I wanted to get that job. I wanted to gain an advantage. I wanted to this, I wanted to that. And then you ask yourself the question of, what would happen if I wasn't liked? What would happen if I didn't get that job? What would happen if I didn't have the advantage? Where do I go inside then? That's a great question to ask yourself, because if I think about, you know, doing this in real time right now, what would happen if I wasn't liked by my coworkers in the 90s when I was still this people-pleasing guy? Well, then I would probably feel, I don't know, inferior. If I wasn't liked, then that meant I wasn't significant to them. I wasn't important. I don't know. There's things that you can look at in your own life. And there's also a sense of maybe rejection or abandonment. I did not want to feel that. So that might be a powerful motivator for me to be this people-pleasing, rescuing, chameleon guy that shows up. And as long as I'm all of these things, then people continue to like me. So yeah, that's probably in the mix as well. And that may be what you've experienced too. So the final question I asked is, what would happen if I didn't, or I wasn't liked, or I didn't get the job, or I didn't fit in, or this and this and this? What would happen to me inside? Where would I go with that? What emotions come up? What do I feel? So that's a great way to search for that inside of you. And then when you figure it out, like, oh, I don't want to feel, for example, rejected or abandoned. Did you ever feel those things when you were a child? So this is a lot of self-exploration. I can tell you around the time it started for me and probably why I developed it. But, you know, this is going to be something that you would figure out in yourself and understand it more. Now, let me go to your next point, which is, I would like to know, let's see, how it developed and what are some of the pitfalls associated with being a chameleon. So let me address that. Yes, there are pitfalls to this. At first, they don't seem like pitfalls because you end up making friends with everyone. Everyone loves you. Everyone wants to be with you. Everyone is your friend and they look at you as their best friend, or sometimes just a really good friend or whatever. And that seems like a very nice place to be. What happens, I've already mentioned one of the pitfalls, is that it drains you to not be authentic. It drains you to not show up as who you really are. and say what you really want to say and behave in a way that you want to behave. It's draining. So, because you're putting on this second persona or this mask over yourself. And so you show up as this adaptable person because you're adapting to the people and the environment, but it's not really who you are. For example, I might meet someone who smokes cigarettes and likes to party and, you know, go to rock and roll concerts late at night, and I might not do any of that. But if I were still that adaptable chameleon person, I might end up going out late at night and partying and being there against what I really want to do, because I want to be liked, because I want to be seen as that guy that will like me. If I'm liked, then I fit in, then I feel good. But then I get home and I'm exhausted and I don't want to ever do that again. So the pitfall there is that I'm showing up as someone I don't want to be and doing things I don't want to do just for gaining some sort of acceptance with people that I don't even really want to hang out with. That's really what it comes down to. So it's all about zapping that energy and diminishing what fulfills you and what makes you happy. So there's that part of it. That's one of those pitfalls that you wanted to know about. And the second pitfall is what starts to happen with your relationships is that they start to fall apart and you can't figure out why. You have no idea why your relationships are falling apart. And this goes back to people's unconscious minds can sense something different about you. They don't know what it is, but you're always so nice. And that's really strange to some people. That would be strange to me. If you were always nice, nothing ever upset you, that might be one of the things. I mean, that doesn't mean that's you, but that's who I used to be. I would show up never upset about anything. And if something made me angry, I would swallow it. Nobody would know about it. If I had trouble going on at home, nobody would know about it. I would never share anything personal that was negative because I always wanted to appear as that positive guy, optimistic. I definitely learned that in childhood. If I was positive and optimistic, then that did not incite drunk stepdad behavior. At least that's what I learned when I was younger. If I was upset, then that might incite the behavior. I don't recall it too well now, but I'm sure that's how it developed for me. So I would show up in the adult world at work and relationships, and nobody ever saw my, quote, dark side. Nobody ever saw that side. So they started to subconsciously suspect something. It wasn't conscious. They don't know why. And what happened is my relationships started deteriorating, especially my romantic relationships. Friendships were a lot easier to keep. Friends are a different animal. And when you're a people pleaser with a friend, you know, you're great to be around. You're always saying yes. I mean, they have no problem with that. But when you're with someone romantically, they know you so well that when you never show up as anyone else, but this person that you think they want to see, then they sense something is up. It's very subconscious, and eventually it falls apart. I mean, that's what happened in my first long-term relationship. It fell apart because I never showed up as my authentic self. I mean, that's not the only reason, but that's one of the big reasons, is that she never saw me angry. She never saw me a lot of ways. She never saw me really assertive. She never really saw a masculine side of me because I hid that away. It was just this old program that was running. And because she didn't see that, she would often ask me questions, or sometimes ask me questions like, do you still love me? And I would be like, well, of course I love you. I mean, like, you're the love of my life. But for her to come up with that question after me looking at our past going, I don't know where she came up with that, tells me that there was a lot of subconscious stuff that she was sensing that I didn't even know I was exhibiting. And it does come from not experiencing the full breadth of your own humanity. If you show up and you're not experiencing the full breadth of your humanity and people don't experience that authentic you, they're going to start interpreting your actions, your behavior, your words. They're going to start putting their own story on how you show up. And they're going to have a little niggling suspicion inside them about you. They may not know how to define it. They may not call it a suspicion. They may not have any idea, but there's something about you that's not right. And again, that's not necessarily a conscious thought, but it's going to happen. So that's a huge pitfall. When you talk about the pitfalls of being a chameleon, when you show up as always adapting to your environment and other people, you're not being the authentic you. For example, you go to a seminar and you walk into the room and everyone loves the speaker. And they're all talking about the speaker. Oh, the speaker said all this stuff and I love it. And you come in and you hear the speaker and you're like, oh my God, that speaker's terrible. Do you join the crowd and go, oh yeah, that speaker's great and he said this and he said that? Or do you go, no, I didn't get that at all when he spoke. In fact, when he said this, it was a complete opposite of what I've come to believe and what I've seen. Do you have the ability to show up as you with an opposing opinion, with an opposing viewpoint? Because when you can embrace that inside yourself, now you're really showing up in life. Now you're finding out who will be there to support you honoring yourself. You may have heard me say, when you find people that honor you honoring yourself, you've got some quality relationships there. So this is how you find out. You show up and say the things that you really want to say and be the person that you really want to be. But you know, you choose wisely. You don't necessarily have to show up as authentic as you want to be with a violent person, because then you might get hurt. So you have to pick and choose the right people in your life, and hopefully they're all good and you can be yourself with them. But that's the idea, is who can you be yourself with and who's going to stick around after you do that? Because when they stick around after you do that, now you know you have a quality friendship and it's built on authenticity. You show up as you, they accept you as you, boom, you have a friend for life. Someone else shows up as them and you accept them for them, friend for life. At least that's the hope, right? So, you know, there's one last thing on this. I don't want to get too deep into it because of time, but the last thing is, I know it can be hard to show up authentically if you've never done it. That doesn't mean the steps are hard. It just means that you may not know who you are. And that's a challenge, because this is something I had to develop in myself. And my number one step to take to find out who you are, this is key, hope I'm not wrong, is to do this. When you're in a situation where you really want to say or do something different, you honor yourself and do or say what's really on your mind. Because looking at my own life and challenging myself, I realized that most of the time I didn't do what I wanted to do or say what I wanted to say in particular moments of life. And by doing that, I was adapting. I was being somebody I didn't want to be. So this has been the number one step forward for me, is to go, this is what I really want to say. I'm going to say it. That's hard to do. That's a hard step to take. But what it does is, as you do that more and more, you start to understand who you are. So if you have no idea who you are because you've been inauthentic for a long time, and maybe even inadvertently inauthentic, that's how you start, is you have a thought, an idea, or you have a differing opinion or something, and you really want to say it or do it, but you swallow it typically. You don't swallow it. You do it or say it. And then you have the results. And when you do this, you start to define yourself and really solidify who you are. And believe me, I've tested this. I've come from a place of not knowing who the hell I am to being who I am today, because I kept defining and administering and adhering to my boundaries. So I had to learn what those boundaries were. All I had to do was ask myself, do I accept this or don't I accept this? Do I like this or don't I like this? Really simple questions as you go through different stages of life. Do I like this? Do I not like this? And then being honest with yourself and with others and expressing it, or at least getting into alignment with it. Like if you don't want to go to a late night party, you get into alignment with yourself and go, no, I don't want to go to a late night party. And then they might go, oh, come on, you're being a party pooper. Come on. So there's that peer pressure, right? This is your opportunity to go, no, I feel better if I didn't do that. I'm going to go to the library and read. I don't know if you'd do that instead, but that's the idea, is that that's how you really feel. And then you check in with yourself and go, wow, I made the right decision. I feel so good. I woke up the next morning. I wasn't hungover or felt like I had jet lag, or, you know, I did what I wanted to do that night. I did what I wanted to do last night, and it felt pretty good. That's how you start defining you and who you really are. And then you keep showing up more and more as that person. And pretty soon, the people who want to be with you and are your friends and are your lovers and are your family members will know who you are and know how you like to be treated. Because when you're adaptable, they don't know how you like to be treated, because you're just showing up as the way you think they want you to show up. And that's challenging. So I'm going to leave it at that, because I could talk about this subject for a long time. So I hope this helps. Thank you so much, Joe. That is a great question. Great topic to talk about and to start the show. We'll be right back after this. I'm really excited because my sister has had a StoryWorth subscription for the almost last year, the entire year, and that's what they do. StoryWorth is a company that sends you an email once a week, and what they do is collect these stories about your life, even pictures, that they place into a hardbound keepsake book that they give you at the end of the year. And I'm very excited because my sister is coming up to that end of the year mark. And, you know, at first when she started getting these questions from StoryWorth, I was like, I want to see what she says. I want to see her answers. And so I received a copy of those answers in my email. And it was just really fun to read through her history and read some things about her that I didn't necessarily know about. And even though I lived with her for, you know, quite a number of years when we were kids, but she was telling stories that I didn't even know that she went through. So I was very excited to receive these emails. But then I realized I'm spoiling the surprise because I really wanted to actually read them in the book at the end of the year. So I went in and changed my settings, so I didn't receive the emails anymore. And since then, it's been, I don't know, 6 or 8 months since I've done that. I've not seen her replies. So there's a whole chunk of her life that I'm so looking forward to reading about and learning about her when I get my hands on this book. So I can't wait to visit her again. I know she's going to have this book on her coffee table the next time I go there. And I want to tell you about this service. It's really cool. It's something I looked into when it came across my desk, and I had to have it. I gave it to my sister. You can actually buy a subscription for someone you love or someone you care about. And what they do is receive an email once a week asking about their life. And, you know, some are simple questions, some are deeper questions, but the answers are so golden. They're so amazing to read through and learn about someone else's life. So this is what I want you to do, is go to storyworth.com/brain, and you'll get $20 off when you subscribe. And, you know, Christmas is right around the corner, or someone's birthday is coming up, or if you just want to give that special gift to someone that maybe they've never heard about, this is a great gift to give. It's a great way to connect with family and laugh over memories or cry over memories. And you can learn about people, see their surprising responses, their moving responses. It's a wonderful way to help them preserve their memories too. They can pass it on to their children and or their children's children. It's just a neat conversation piece, along with just not only going over memories, but creating new ones too as you read through. And it's a real hardcover printed book. And all they have to do is write stories and upload photos. And it's really easy to do. It's just like answering an email. Check it out. Go to storyworth.com/brain. You know, I'm personally looking forward to one of her stories about maybe high school. You know, I was the big brother in high school. And it was really neat having a little sister in high school, because first, when I saw her in the hallways, that was just fun to see her there. But also I felt like, you know, I was sort of there to protect her. I don't know if I really had to protect her at any time, but I wonder if she wrote about our high school experiences and what we went through. So Carrie, if you're listening, I love you. Go to storyworth.com/brain. Welcome back. I'm going to talk about a subject matter that someone asked me to talk about. Someone reached out and said, hey, I have a topic suggestion. What about when your girlfriend doesn't know how to tell you she wants space, so she intentionally hurts you so you'll leave? And then she says, hopefully we'll work out, but there are no guarantees. So, you know, that's a good question. Why do people hurt each other instead of just being honest? You know, I mean, maybe there's more to this question than he's asking, but that's the first place I go is like, why would you intentionally hurt someone to cause them to leave instead of saying, hey, look, it's not working out. I have an issue with this relationship. I have an issue with you. Will you please leave? You know, I go in that direction with this topic suggestion. But there's also the direction of doing it when you are, well, let's talk about this. There's a few things to talk about. One, if you feel like you have to hurt someone to get them to leave, that tells me that you are afraid to communicate with them in any other way, in an honest way, in a way where you can say what I just said, like, hey, look, I'm having a problem. This is a problem in our relationship, and I don't like being in this relationship with this problem. Or how about something even harder, like, I've fallen out of love with you. What do you do with that information? I think one of the things that comes to mind, you know, when I put myself in the shoes of the person who might hurt the other person to get them to leave, is that I feel this immense fear of their reaction. What if I say I don't love them? How will they react? And this goes along the lines of what kind of communication have you established from the get-go? When you first got together, how were you communicating? How did you communicate? And when you talked to each other, was there fear and was it justified? Did you share something with your partner and they reacted so strongly that you felt like maybe I shouldn't share anything else, or at least the hard stuff? Because that can happen. You know, the person who wrote, I'm going to call him Jim. You know, Jim's probably asking, what's up with that? Why would she intentionally hurt me instead of the alternative? You know, talk to me or let's work through these problems or something else. And I would tell you, Jim, was there ever a way in which you showed up that when she shared information with you, you made it unsafe for her or made her fear your reaction in some way? Did you blow up? If not that, maybe the opposite. Did you withdraw emotionally? Did you pout? Did you sulk? I'm not making fun. I'm just saying this is what happens, is that we have a reaction to a hard truth or scary information, and we don't know what to do. So we go into this reaction state, and the reaction might be too much for the other person to take. That doesn't mean they shouldn't still be honest with you. It just means that your reaction often dictates their ability to tell you anything again, at least the hard stuff, you know, the stuff that has an impact on the relationship. If they fear telling you something, it's quite possible and probable, and probably is the reason they don't tell you, is because of how you responded or reacted. And then you set that precedent from that point forward. So when you share something with your partner, how do they react? And is their reaction so hard to deal with in you that you're afraid to share again? Because this is what happens in relationships all the time. I've seen this since when I was a young adult on. From that point forward, not necessarily in my own relationships, but it did exist, but especially in other people's relationships. Like I remember my girlfriend's best friend telling me that she was going to the beach. And I asked her, oh, is so-and-so going? I think her boyfriend at the time. And she goes, what? I would never tell him I'm going to the beach. Are you kidding me? And I was just befuddled. I was like, that's an odd statement to make. Why wouldn't you tell the person that you're supposed to be in a loving, trusting, caring, nurturing, supportive relationship with that you're not going to the beach? So obviously there was something in that relationship that couldn't be expressed, couldn't be communicated, because her reaction told me that she was afraid to share that with that person. So maybe that person might say, what, you're going to the beach and not working? Or what, you're going to the beach and you're going to be in a bikini and people are going to see you? You know, who knows what his reaction was going to be. But that tells you a lot. It tells you, if she can't even tell him that she's going to the beach, what else is she hiding? You know, it's like the episode, a couple episodes back, I think, where I talked about the white lies in relationships and how they can absolutely start to build and create a rift in the relationship so that eventually there's a breakup. And then you're like, what are you talking about? Why are we breaking up? Not realizing that all these little white lies that have built up are actually causing the relationship to dissolve. You may not see it in the moment and during the white lie, whoever's telling it, but it's happening because subconsciously the other person detects this white lie and can sense that there is some truth not being told. You can't hide. I mean, it's just, like I said, you can't figure it out in the moment, but you can't hide from the trend of what happens when there are these little lies that are told throughout the relationship, or these little holdbacks, like someone holding back who they are from you because they don't want your reaction. Your reaction to someone else's commentaries, to someone else's revelations, absolutely define the path they take again, because they're going to gauge how you reacted and wonder if they can handle that reaction again. You help create these rifts, believe it or not. I'm not saying it's your fault, and I'm not really saying it's your responsibility. I'm just saying it's what happens. So how you respond to things is how people end up treating you. So this is very important, Jim. If you haven't gotten this concept, it's very, very likely that how you responded to anything is why she ended up hurting you. And if she felt the need to hurt you so that you'd leave or you'd separate or something, then it's quite possible she feared how you'd react any other way. So what was her, I don't know, backup plan is to hurt you. Now, I'm not saying that's the only thing going on here. It's quite possible she hurt you because there's something else going on in her life. She found someone else, or she really, I'll be frank here, she thinks that you're terribly unattractive. I don't mean to say this in a mean way. I'm just thinking that maybe sometimes people hurt each other because they don't want to tell them even worse news. That's probably not what happened here, Jim, but it is possible. For example, the person is no longer attracted to his partner. They are together for many, many years, and they realize, I'm no longer attracted to this person. What do I do about it? Now, that might sound shallow, but it happens. There could be a depth to their relationship that they never achieved. You know, when you achieve a certain depth in connection with your relationship, attraction usually is deeper than the surface. But if you haven't achieved that depth, or you just aren't attracted for a number of reasons, then it's hard to tell the person, I'm not attracted to you anymore. It's an honest thing to do, because just saying that doesn't mean they're an unattractive person. But let's just say that that person they're talking to is highly sensitive to what people say about their looks. And by saying, I'm not attracted to you anymore, that person goes into a downward depression and is at the bottom of the world, is in an awful place, quits her job, locks herself in her home, and now suddenly you have someone that is just devastated and you feel like you're at fault. this can happen too. So what I'm saying is that there are the types of reactions that you have could be very angry or a deep depression or so shocked and unable to get past it that it becomes an issue in the relationship for years. It all depends on your reactions. Your reactions will gauge and define someone's approach to you. So Jim, when you say, you know, why would someone hurt or what is going on there? She intentionally hurt me so I would leave. And then she says, well, hopefully it'll work out. You know, with that comment, hopefully it'll work out, that tells me that she wanted out of the relationship and she was adding some placaters so that you wouldn't be upset. Like if you believe there was a chance that it would work out, that you wouldn't be as upset. So she adds these little placaters, these little buffers to your emotion. I don't know if you want to, probably not the best name for it, but she's buffering your anger so you're not as angry, or your sadness so you're not as sad, by telling you something that probably isn't true. I'm just guessing. Because someone who intentionally hurts you to get you away from them and then says something like, hey, you know, someday we could get back together, we'll see. That just tells me they don't really want to tell you the whole truth. Now, it may have nothing to do with you at all. So here's the third and final perspective of this, is that it's quite possible that that person you're talking about, simply grew up learning to fear people's reactions, and this is how she copes and survives in life. It's unfortunate, but this is what happens, especially when you're a child with adults that don't want to hear anything but what they want to hear. Like, Mom, I broke the cookie jar. And then the child gets smacked so hard and repeatedly that she never wants to share information like that ever again. I mean, that can happen. So if there's any type of trauma or abuse or neglect in childhood, when the child wants to express him or herself and they see that as the direct cause, when I express myself, I get punished, they may not want to do it ever again with anyone else. This is the kind of stuff that we learn about when we're in our 20s, our 30s, our 40s, and we realize, oh, my relationships all fail because I am doing this behavior. And when we learn about it, then we can go, wait, this doesn't apply in the adult world. This only applied when I was a kid and I needed to survive. I don't need to survive the same way, at least, in the adult world. I need to take steps that help me thrive, that empower me, that let me keep my power, let them keep their power, so that I can be in a relationship and speak honestly without fear of repercussions because I'm with someone that I've established an honest level of communication with. So this is important to remember, that when you get into a relationship, how are your reactions? And do you notice that based on your reactions, they tell you more or less? So here's what I started practicing when I was married. I started practicing giving my wife a safe zone. What that means is that if she had something very important to tell me, or very scary to tell me, or relationship threatening to tell me, then what I would do is open up the space for her to share it without my judgment, without my comments, without me reacting, without me putting the guilt trip on her or making her feel bad or telling her she's wrong. I just stayed silent, listened, allowed her to express it, even if she said things about me that were incorrect. That's very challenging to do because you'll get triggered. That's what happens. Is that they'll share something with you, you'll get triggered, and then you'll sit there in your trigger and wait for them to finish. Because that's the key. You wait for them to exhaust everything they need to say. And then you have to sit with it for a little bit. Because first of all, they may not want you to respond. They may just want to say this stuff and say, I don't want you to respond. Or they may say the opposite. What do you think about that? And then you have an opportunity to respond. Now, it doesn't mean you can't be angry. It doesn't mean you can't feel offended. It just means you give yourself enough time to articulate in a way that is productive and also expressive. Like, I don't want you to turn off your authentic self, because what happens is when you get into trigger mode, you typically go unconscious. You typically are in this fight or flight state, and you will say things that are in the moment that may not necessarily be true in general. Like the words, I hate you, might come out, but you don't really mean that overall. You might mean it in that moment, but overall, when you think about everything that you have together, it may not be true. But that's what happens when we're triggered. We say things that we don't necessarily mean or aren't necessarily true. They may be true to an extent. Like there may be hatred about something in there if the word hate came out. But saying it in that moment while you're being triggered isn't always the best path to take. I don't mind all-out blowout arguments, to be honest. Sometimes it has to come out, but that only typically works with two people that are healthy enough to argue in a productive way. I mean, that sounds weird. Let me rephrase that. I don't mind you blowing up at your partner blowing up at you, as long as you are emotionally healthy enough to be conscious and to be present for yourself and for them. Because once you go unconscious, once you're not present in the argument, then it can be a mess. It can turn into things that you don't want it to turn into. Feelings can get hurt. But if you can be present while being angry, that's a great place to be sometimes. I don't always recommend having blowout arguments. I really appreciate giving your partner the safe zone to talk, to express it to the fullest, and then you speak and express to the fullest as long as there's an equal amount of time given. Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes it's very heated. But the idea of allowing the other person to speak their mind, to say their truths, lets them know that it is safe to do it. And that's my main point, is that when you allow someone to feel safe expressing even the hardest stuff, they're going to share the deepest stuff. They're going to share their secrets with you. They're going to share everything with you because you are safe to do so. And the more safe you are to them, the more connected they'll be with you, the more bonded they'll be with you, the closer they'll feel with you, and the more they'll trust you so that there are no secrets. I'm not saying you can't have secrets. I'm just saying the secrets that affect the relationship. When there are no relationship secrets, then you're not hiding what you're going to do today, because when there's nothing like that hanging over a relationship, it goes a lot smoother. But as you know, a lot of relationships aren't built like that. A lot of them are built like, I better not say this to my partner. I better not say this to my partner. I better not say this. I better not do this. It'll make them angry. I better not do that. It'll make them angry. Those reactions cause the rifts. So this is what may have happened with you, Jim. It's either your reaction that caused her to not want to share with you what's really going on in her, or she herself had fears or thoughts about sharing anything with anyone, especially the people that are closest to her, because that's how she grew up. If she shared something that she knew would hurt the other person or make them feel bad or make them angry, she just learned not to do it. And that's hopefully something she can work on in herself if that's the case. I mean, either way, it's a good thing to work on that. Unless you were just so difficult to live with or so difficult to talk about things with that she had no other choice but to wean you off of her. Because that happens. Oh, there's another one more thing. There's probably a lot more things with this, but there's one more thing. My girlfriend once dated someone who she didn't really want to date anymore. So she tried to end it amicably. It was a very short thing. But he started stalking her. So this stalker would call her, would text her, would show up, and she was getting nervous. She did not like this behavior. She wanted him to honor her wishes, and he wouldn't go away. So what she ended up doing was poisoning the water so that, not really, but poisoning the emotional water so that he would eventually not want to be with her anymore. So even though she shared with him honestly what she didn't want, he didn't listen. He didn't care. He wanted her, and it didn't matter what she said, he was going to continue pursuing her. That's a bad thing to do. So she wanted to get away from him. She couldn't, So she started being a girlfriend that he didn't admire or desire anymore. If there's someone afraid of someone else, then they may start acting in a way that weans that person away from them. Because eventually the stalker person stopped seeing her as desirable because she started showing up as not desirable, as someone that might be ugly in his eyes. And, you know, I won't say exactly what she did, but let's just say that if she was sweet before, she was no longer sweet. She showed up as this person that was definitely not relationship material in his eyes, or probably most people's eyes, but she wanted to wean him off of her. So that's another thing, is if someone wants to get away from you because they're afraid of you, they may do this too. Although typically they don't try to hurt, they more try to dull your senses. But this, you know, we can go into a whole another category with this, trying to get away from the stalker, away from that person, which is a good subject to talk about. But as far as someone hurting you, I think what I've spoken of so far is probably the main reasons why it might happen. Overall, the goal in communication in a relationship is to feel comfortable expressing yourself with the person. If you're not comfortable expressing yourself to your partner, then the relationship is going to have something hanging over it that is always there that you'll never get past until you do, until you actually talk about things and express things in a way where you go, you know what, this is hard to say, but I'm going to say it anyway because I don't want a relationship based on holding information back, based on deceiving you, based on worrying about how you're going to respond. I'm going to lay it all on the table, then we have something to work with. Now, if the other person is always reactionary and it's always scary or always angry, then you say, look, I can't tell you anything because you're always angry. So either you have to work on that or we have to work on this together. But if you're not willing to work on this reactionary state that you're in, this anger, then maybe this isn't meant to be. Of course, saying that might make them angry. Which means you might have to wean them off of you in some other way. Who knows? This goes very, very deep. But I will say this, Jim, I wish you the best. If this happened to you, sometimes you can't get an answer. Sometimes you can't get closure. And all you can really do is start focusing on how you can show up in the relationship as the safest place for someone to share things with you. Even if those things are about you, even if they are offensive and they trigger you and they make you angry, it's just to process it and allow them to express. And then, of course, hopefully you have a partner that allows you to do the same thing. And it may not always happen within that same period of time. They may have to express and they may need to sit with it for a while and they may not want you to reply right away. And that takes patience and that takes a lot of discipline and presence of mind. So I don't know where you are with that, but I wish you the best. Send me an update sometime, and thank you so much for writing in. And thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back with some thank yous, and I'll say my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. Hey, I want to thank someone that left a review on Amazon, and it wasn't even for the book. Well, I'm laughing because you don't know why I'm laughing yet, but the review was for my book, even though the person didn't read it. So, Kayla, I think? Kayla Buchanan? Kayla? Thank you for your review, she said. I haven't read the book personally, but I listen to Paul's podcast regularly, and I absolutely love him. I love you too. Thank you, Kayla. So Kayla, thank you so much for that review. Very kind of you. I don't know if that's allowed on Amazon if you actually haven't read the book. But hey, I said I would mention you on there if you left a review for the book, and I appreciate you. And thank you for your kind words. I'm so grateful for you. Thank you again. And I want to thank today's sponsor. Go to storyworth.com/brain and get $20 off the subscription and give them the gift of their life. It's a really cool gift. I've not seen anything like it out there, and I can't wait to get my hands on the book that my sister is creating as we speak. Storyworth.com/brain. And I want to thank the patron members of the Overwhelmed Brain patron site, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Some of the patron members have been there since, like, day one, supporting this show, and they're an integral part of how I get this on the air every week. So I am appreciative of you. Anyone who's joined the patron program is supporting the show, even if it's just for a few months or a few years, like some of you are doing. Every supporter is helping. And of course, I give back. I create new episodes, new workbooks. For those of you in the gold plus plus, whatever I call it, program, you get the email coaching as well. So check it out, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And whether you're a patron or not, thank you. If you've purchased any of my books or workbooks or guides or even used the Amazon link on the website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com, the Amazon link is a great thing to use during Christmas, and it's a great way to give back. So if you're going to shop on Amazon, even if you're out of the country, I think I have it set up for international now too. A lot of countries can use the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And whenever you buy something, Amazon sends us a few pennies on the dollar, and that helps the show as well. So thank you. Your shopping habits are making a difference. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. So what's one of the pitfalls of having a relationship with someone who has explosive reactions? Like we talked about in the last segment, where you want to spend time with someone, but they might have some sort of violent, aggressive, or explosive reaction. I received an email a couple, 3 months back regarding someone who didn't or wasn't sure she should invite her sister to her wedding, because every time they've been out, or many times they've been out, there was always some sort of drama, some sort of reaction, some sort of emotional outburst that seemed to ruin things or really change the vibe. And she was wondering, you know, should I invite her, should I not? I've reached out to this person and wondered how their wedding went, and if she actually invited her sister or not. I don't know the answer to that yet. When I find out, I'll let you know. And what I wanted to tell her, but I didn't get a chance to before her wedding, was that sometimes there are people in your life that when you look at trend, I like to look at trends, when you look at the trend of how they've behaved, you have to base your choices on the trend. Now, what might cause you to not look at the trend is if the person went through some sort of healing or growing and figured things out in their life and realized, oh, crap, I've been showing up as a problem. I've been an issue, a challenge for people, and I finally realize it. And that's when the trend can and hopefully does stop. But if it doesn't stop, if you haven't seen any improvement like that, then you really have to gauge if you want to deal with that type of behavior at a special event, like a wedding. Now, the first thing that came to mind, which is probably a stupid idea, is to have a real wedding and then have a small gathering, fake wedding or addendum wedding with certain people in your life, closer family. And maybe sometimes those closer family members will have this issue or an issue with, you know, drinking too much or showing up and being a problem in some way. Again, it's a stupid idea. I'm not saying you should do it, but that's the first thing that came to my mind. I'd be like, what would happen if we had a real wedding and then we had a small gathering and we didn't call it a wedding? We called it an opportunity for the quote closest family members to get together and celebrate your union or something. So I just thought of that. You know, it reminds me of when I worked in a company where everyone used to change the heat in the air conditioning. Some people found it too hot, so they would change it to heat. Some people found it too cold, so they would change it to AC. And it kept going back and forth, back and forth. And so my thought was to install a fake thermostat. So when they get up and go change it to cold, they think it's working, but it's not really. And people change it to hot, think it's working, but it's not really. And of course, you know, no one would be happy, but no one was happy anyway, so we just decided to, I think they ended up putting like a little plastic cage over it where nobody could get to it. Only the people with a key could get to it because it was a temperature regulated room. You actually really shouldn't have been touching the thermostat. So they ended up locking it up. But of course, we would find these like paper clips that were unbent and made into really long, straight temperature adjusters. Because we had one of these temperature control switches at the bottom that you can move left or right, and people would just adjust the temperature that way. So they always found a way. But I don't know why I told you that. I think it just reminds me of this fake wedding thing. Oh, yeah, that's right. So having this addendum wedding might be a solution, or maybe just the stupidest idea I've ever said. But regardless, I do think it's important to absolutely consider the people that are going to be in your life or in an event with you, at a gathering with you. If they've shown up that way before, expect that they'll do it again, unless they've reached enlightenment or some sort of healing. Because the event itself is probably a trigger for their behavior in some way, whether that's because of the people that are there or the stuff that's talked about. I mean, some people don't like seeing other people happy. And as soon as they're happy, they get triggered. Like, you're happy? Then I'm going to ruin everything. Unfortunately, there are people like that. Hopefully, you don't run into that. And I just want to thank the person who wrote in and shared that with me. I hope things went well with your wedding. I wish you the best. And hopefully, the people you know in your life that are following that unsavory trend of always being the one that kind of crashes the party, if you know what I'm saying, hopefully they'll learn to keep an open mind so that they can step into their power just like you. You should step into your power. How do you do that? You keep toxic people out of your life sometimes. I mean, that's sometimes the way it has to go. Of course, sometimes the fastest way to healing is to deal with the toxic people in your life and be honest with them and put them in their place, but that doesn't always work out either. So that's when you have to become firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve, and there will be people who try to keep you from taking those steps. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know without a doubt, you are amazing.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.